Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
South African-based Adam Howard, who's a conductor and owner of Howard Audios. Adam offers years of talent, training, and industry experience. Adam received his classical music degree from the world-famous Guildhall School of Drama and Music in London, and originally came to South Africa to take up the position of principal trumpet player of the New Arts Philharmonic Orchestra of Pretoria in 1997, and later as principal trumpet player of the Johannesburg Philharmonic Orchestra. Since then, Adam has composed, arranged, produced, and performed for many of South Africa's leading musicians, including Freshly Ground, Mafiki Zolo, Hugh Masekela, and the Soweto Gospel Choir. In 2010, Adam performed at the FIFA World Cup kickoff concert with the likes of John Legend, Alicia Keys, and Angelique Kidjo. Adam also leads his talents as musical director and conductor for William Kendridge, the Johannesburg Festival Orchestra, and the Johannesburg Big Band, which plays host to some of the top session musicians in the country. Adam's diverse career and talents gives him a holistic view of the industry that shines through in his work. Up next on Celeb Savant, live in studio at Solid Gold Podcast in Randburg, Johannesburg, South Africa, taking us through his journey in the creative and music world, and he tells us about his latest production, My Favorite Broadway, is Adam Howard. And with me, I've got Adam Howard.
Hello.
Hello. Nice to see you again.
Good to see you, Barrett. Yes.
Yes. So we have interacted a couple of shows and events that we've seen each other at or you've been producing. Let's start at the very beginning. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel, cool, I want to be in this creative world? And how did that journey progress?
Well, it's good to be here. First of all,
thank you.
It's always nice seeing you on our shows and and keeping musical theatre news alive. So it's great to be here. Look, it's all I've ever known. And when I say probably 2.5, 3 years old, it was quite evident to my parents that I was interested in music, just sounds and always hitting things. And we did have a little keyboard in the house. I started playing on that keyboard when I was about 3 or 4. I was born in a small little village near a town called Rochdale, near a city called Manchester. It's a very rural areas. And in each of these small villages was a brass band, or maybe two. It's a big Northern England tradition, brass bands. So I used to hear these brass bands. By the age of 6, I'd started piano lessons. There was a piano teacher in the village. And thankfully, she was an amazing teacher. I always say your first music teacher is so instrumental. Pardon the pun. There's lots of stories of people's first music teachers just putting them off. But her name was Elaine Bailey, and she just gave me this gift of music straight away. I used to walk up to her house and have 2 piano lessons a week. By the age of 7, I'd been pestering my mother and father for a trumpet of some sort, because I used to see these brass bands playing. And there was a church organization called the Church Lads and Church Girls Brigade. It's like the Boys Brigade. It's like the Scout Movement. And they had a brass band as well. So by the age of 8, I think they tried to shut me up by giving me a bugle, which is a trumpet without vowels. And they play fanfare music because there's no vowels. You can't get in between some notes. By the age of 9, I'd progressed to the trumpet, started having lessons on that. Playing in local brass bands. I saw a famous music school on TV being advertised. In fact, it was on a kids program called Blue Peter. I'm not sure you got this.
I've heard of it.
It's like a kids show.
I have heard of it.
And it was this amazing school where young children auditioned to get into this school. And if you got a place, the government would pay for all your fees. It was a boarding school and it was just music, music, music. And I said to my father, I said, I want to go to that school. He said, well, you better bloody practice. I practiced and I did 4 auditions and I got into this school. And that really was a massive trampoline into the music world. By 18, I was auditioning for music colleges in England. I got places to all the main colleges. I got a scholarship to the Guildhall School of Music and Drama at the Barbican Centre in London. Did my music degree. And at 22, my dream was to play first trumpet in orchestras around the world. I wanted to travel. I wanted to leave England by the time I was about 10 or 11 for some reason. I just wanted to see the world. And I thought that the trumpet could be that vehicle where I could travel and maybe play in orchestras.
What is encompassed in a music degree?
This was a Bachelor of Music degree with strong emphasis on trumpet playing. I would say about 65-70% of my final degree marks was my final recital, actually. So it's very geared towards classical trumpet playing. Mm-hmm. But as part of that degree, of course, it was, you know, music theory, music composing, music arranging. I used to play in the, you know, the jazz band there. I was told, no, it's going to ruin my embouchure, which is my lips, by a teacher, which was complete nonsense. So I was playing in this amazing big band. They had an electronic music studio. So I was one of two students out of 300. We chose to do electronic music because it wasn't really looked upon as, you know, it was a MIDI studio. But I was very excited when I got into the studio because I could get all these musical ideas onto, it was tape in those days.
Yeah.
It wasn't quarter inch tape. It was DAT tape. It was digital tape. So so that's where I got a big grounding. But as I left college, I just thought that was just all to just make me a better musician in general. But I wanted to be a trumpet player playing in orchestras. The day I left college, I got a call from a German orchestra. A long story short, the first trumpet player at that orchestra literally had walked out in a rehearsal. And there's a few friends of mine there, and they were going on a world tour in 5 days' time. They said, come over, there's 10 trumpet players auditioning. If you get the gig, you're going on a world tour for 3 months. And I got the gig. So the day I left college, I realized my dream. I got first trumpet in the Philharmonie de Nationen, which is a orchestra formed by Leonard Bernstein. And after his death, it lived on. And it was an orchestra of young people. And their motto was to spread the word of peace through the power of music. And we went all around the world playing for a year and a half. I played in that orchestra. And then I got a call from a friend in South Africa who just got a job at the State Theatre in Pretoria. I didn't even know where Pretoria was. I mean, I knew where South Africa was. I'm not like Donald Trump, you know. I said, yeah, you know, South Africa somewhere, you know. But to cut a long story short, he said, look, it's a brand new orchestra at the State Theatre. It's the New Arts Philharmonic Orchestra of Pretoria, conducted by Maestro Gerard Corsten. Hey, Corsten's.
Oh, okay, yes.
So I'm an amazing musician. And it was a new orchestra, and at that time, I was 24. At that time in my career, I was ready for a change. And I thought, what bigger change than to come to a different continent, to a different culture or different cultures and come for 6 months. I signed a 6-month contract. I got the job, obviously. And I decided to stay here for 6 months and just to see what would happen. And I've been here every day since. And that was in 1997.
Okay.
So I think it's safe to say that I fell in love with South Africa from the word go, and I've never looked back.
What does it mean to be a first trumpeter?
In a symphony orchestra, you have different sections. You have strings, violins, violas, cellos, double basses. You've got woodwinds, flutes, oboes, clarinets, bassoons. You've got the brass section, which is trumpets, trombones, tuba, French horns. Then you've got the percussion section as well. Timpani, xylophones, anything that you hit. Mm. And usually you've got 2 to 3 to 4 trumpets in an orchestra. If you're playing Bruckner's symphonies or Tchaikovsky symphonies, maybe 3-4 trumpets. And the first trumpet player plays all the solos, all the pearly bits, as we say, all the stuff that makes you shake. All the sort of, all the sort of quiet bits, all the high stuff, Star Wars, or, you know, all those, you know, Superman, all those high themes. And you lead the section as well. So you're in charge of the section. Maybe you look down the section and tell the guys, hey, maybe play a little bit louder, or third trumpet, you're playing sharp or something like that. So you're a leader of the section with you and the first trombone. I've always played first trumpet in, you know, in orchestras. And there's something really good about being a good fourth trumpet player as well. You're playing all the low notes, and you're the foundation for the first trumpet player too. So it's like a football team. You've got the strikers, you've got the defenders, you've got the midfielders, you know.
Oh, wow.
And we're all responsible for different parts of the symphonic puzzle, as I would say.
So you said you always wanted to be the first trumpeter.
Yes.
So
it's my ego.
The idea of actually doing it and then doing it, were there any things that surprised you about being it and doing it that you didn't realize would be part of it before actually doing it?
Growing up, having trumpet players, having trumpet teachers, I always seem to have first trumpet teachers, you know, like first trumpet playing teachers. And they were my idols as well. I mean, as a young musician, if you respect your teacher, you know, you want to do everything that he or she does, you know, musically. So I just molded myself on one or two of my trumpet teachers. And I suppose it's being able to handle the stress of being in that position as well. I mean, as I say, you're playing all the solos, and I quite like that as well. I don't like just fitting in the background, you know. I like to play the solos. You know, I always have done that. I've always liked the pressure in a way. I like when it's concert night, you know. I like it when it's game, you know, like game night. So, and I think only a few people can really do that, you know, where you have to play the solos and lead the section. And I thrive in that sort of situation.
So you were here for 6 months and decided to stay.
Yes.
You were part of the orchestra at the State Theatre. What are the next steps of your journey in South Africa?
In 2000, so I mean, I was doing that job now for about 3 years, but I was on a salary, so I mean, that's all I could really do. I used to do a few extra bits of work, but the salary was good in those days, I would say. So you get very used to the job, you know. But in 2000, the whole of the State Theatre was retrenched overnight. Opera Oh, wow. Department, the orchestra, ballet. The funding was cut by the government in 2000. So that was probably one of the worst days of my life. But looking back now in hindsight, it was probably one of the best days of my life, because a lot of musicians actually left the country to find other work, because you need governments funding orchestras. And I could see why in 2000, the Department of Arts and Culture maybe stopped the funding of, you know, of the arts at the State Theatre. It's a long and complex story, but I looked at my financial situation and, my new wife, Belinda, who's now a producer at Howard Events, which we'll go into later. And I said to her, look, we've been retrenched. What's my Provident Fund payout? Okay, so we worked out. We had about, in those days, we had about 60,000 rands. I'm British. My wife's Australian. And I said, look, I think I want to stay in South Africa for a bit, but, you know, I've got no job now. So we found out what a one-way ticket each to Australia would be, because that would be our next port of call, I would say. I was 26 at the time, 26, 27. And then we had what we said, now we've got 5 months left where we can pay rent, da, 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 da. And then if nothing happens, then we can leave and we give it up, you know, my all. I knocked on every single door. I knocked on every single studio door in South Africa. I did a demo tape of me and a horn section. We'd started doing some gigs with DJs, playing in clubs, playing house music. I was producing electronic dance music as well. And suddenly in that 5 months, I managed to turn myself into a freelance trumpet player and started playing in more clubs. And within 4 months, I actually realized that I was doubling my salary. I doubled my salary already by being a freelance musician. And that kept on growing, where we started to play with kwaito musicians, actually. I say that kwaito music actually turned me into the musician that I am today. And people think, what? Because we were playing with top kwaito guys like TKZ, Brothers of Peace, Mafika Zolo, Tandiswa Mazwai, Bongo Maffin, and jazz musicians. So I was playing with these guys. So Tembe Mkhize or Bongeni Ngema, Joyous Celebration. We crossed over into all walks of musical life. And being a businessman and entrepreneur, I used these networking exercises, or, you know, playing, you know, like you play with a band, you go on tour, you know, you're talking to musicians.
Yeah.
I was very interested in commercials. I was doing a lot of jingles for other composers. And I thought, I can do this. I've got loads of jingles in my head. So I started then going around to advertising agencies. Even when I didn't have a showreel, I'd never done a commercial. Just knocking on doors. And I tell all young musicians, I mean, that's how I started off, just by knocking on doors and getting in people's faces. And if they said no, I give them a call back a few weeks later. And I eventually managed to get a pitch to write a commercial. And I was up against 5 composers. Seems to be a running theme. And I got the gig. And then I had a showreel. I think, Barrett, over the last 20 years, it's just been a very sort of overnight success of 20 years of where I've now managed to position myself as a top writer, a commercials composer for commercials, for jingles, for radio. I've got 3 studios in Bryanston where I produce albums, compose music for brands, music supervision for, you know, for brands, sonic branding. And over the years, I've used my networking then to form my own ensembles, like the Johannesburg Big Band and the Egoli Symphonic Orchestra, and ultimately to be a producer of live events where we are taking the risk as producers and putting on shows and trying to give audiences a real amazing experience of musical theater, big bands, orchestral music. And we just did Red Bull Symphonic. So what I'm trying to say is over 25, 26 years of being a musician in South Africa, I think it's given me the wings to be whatever I wanted to be, actually. I'm very thankful for that of South Africa. And yeah, I feel as though I'm just starting.
Do you feel, you mentioned that suggestion to the audience about knocking on doors. Do you think or feel or observe that social media has taken that away from people in the sense because they think, oh, social media will do it for them, which is not in the case, not the case, because they have to still knock on those doors. Do you think the platforms have allowed people to get stuck in a safety zone of not going out to interact?
Well, it's changed a little bit. I mean, maybe the actual calling and going into agencies and having meetings and presenting my showreel on a, you know, on a VHS tape. That's what my first showreel was on, was on VHS. Maybe that would be now maybe Zoom meetings or I don't know, you know, but agencies are still open for musicians to call them and to present, you know, I mean, they always like people to present their creative ideas, but times have changed. So a lot of that now is digital, social media. It's very important. I mean, I've actually got a social media team behind myself and Howard Audio and Howard Events and Johannesburg Big Band and all the things, because about a year and a half ago, it just got too much for me personally as well. So then you ask yourself the question, well, you're either on Facebook or Instagram for one reason, and that's publicity. You know, it always grates me how people think it's a, you know, it's a sounding board for people just to know your thoughts. You know, no one's interested in your thoughts. I mean, really, I mean, you can ask experts for that, you know, if you really want to. So, but people use social media for different things. I personally, I use it for marketing, pure selfless, shameless self publicity. If you look down my timeline, you'll see no personal posts of mine of what I think about a political situation.
Yeah, same, yeah.
Or my thoughts on how people should live their lives or what God they should follow, if any.
Or a picture of your fruit salad in the morning.
Yeah, or there's no pictures of my kids. I realize that social media is very important for me. It's very important for people to know what we're doing as a company as well. And what better way to do that with social media? Mm. And that's what it's for, surely.
What does it mean to create a jingle for an advertising campaign, for a brand? How does it work?
Well, I'll be briefed by the agency. For example, let me just think of the a latest one I've just done now for South African Tourism. The brief was that they'd like me to work with Vusi Maklasela, who had done a previous campaign. I know Vusi. They wanted me to bring his ideas to life in studio. Every gig's different, by the way. So me and Vusi spent a few days creating a piece. We recorded it. We've got picture in front of us, by the way. So we've got the visuals for, you know, for inspiration. And SA Tourism, I mean, it's a beautiful brand to, you know, to compose. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to do many global campaigns. So basically, as people, you know, as tourists are landing, they look at this SA Tourism commercial, you know. So, and I've actually landed a few times where it's my music. You know, oh, wow. I mean, writing music for a place that I love. It's, you know, what a gig. Sometimes it might be matte washing powder comes in. They say, look, we want original music. So that's why they're talking to me. And we've got an idea. We'd like, we like this piece of music. So they play me a piece of music. It might be Dixieland. But we want to have brass in it, or, you know, so they give me another. So they give me some ideas and I think, okay. And they give me some lyrical ideas and then I'll turn that into a piece of music, present it to them. They might not like it. Happens all the time. Or they might like it with some changes. Get musicians recorded, get the right vocalists recorded. Sometimes they don't have the money to pay for original music, so they might want library music.
Yes.
And I know that you guys know what library music is, production music, where you've got a library that I subscribe to, millions of tracks, and we license for a fraction of the price of what original music would. But the downfall for that is another company, like the post office, could use that, F&B could use that, and there could be two pieces of music on the radio at the same time.
Yeah.
So every gig is different. Yeah, every gig is different. Sometimes I might ask to be to re-record a piece of existing music. So they license a piece of music, maybe Pitbull, Fireball, for example.
Yes.
But they can't afford the recording rights, but they've got the publishing rights to re-record it. It can't sound like the original, but then I can record Fireball with a string quartet, for example. Mm. So they pay for the licensing, and then they pay for me to record it. So there's many different ways of how a composer works for advertising agencies.
You started the Johannesburg Big Band, and now the Egoli Philharmonic Orchestra.
Egoli Symphonic Orchestra.
Symphonic Orchestra.
Yes.
What is the difference between the two?
The Johannesburg Big Band I formed back in about 2011. And a big band isn't just a band that's big, although it is. It's a jazz orchestra sometimes, jazz band. It's those bands that you see with Frank Sinatra, Michael Bublé, Robbie Williams. It's got four trumpets, four trombones, five saxes. So that's your horn section. And then you've got a rhythm section, drums, piano, bass, guitar, maybe percussion as well. And that's a big band. That's like a jazz big band. So I know that you've been to see many of our shows where it's the music of Frank Sinatra. It's the music of Las Vegas, Michael Bublé, Robbie Williams, you know, and everybody in between, Glenn Miller. It's that sort of sound, you know. And we've been very successful with the band, you know. We've been going for 14, 15 years now.
Okay.
And we've done many performances for corporates and private clients, but more recently for the public now, where, as I said, we've stepped up as producers, as Howard Events. And we've put on shows at the Lyric Theatre and also at the Teatro, at Carnival City. So that's where the audience can come and see a big band. And then recently, it's been on my mind for years and years and years. And we were approached by Red Bull Symphonic this year. I was the conductor and I formed an orchestra for this event. And I thought, it's such a good orchestra. It's such a good idea. It's such a good name. I'm going to keep it going. And an orchestra is different to a big band. It's got strings. It's got woodwinds, as I mentioned before. It's got percussion and brass. People think of that as a classical orchestra sometimes, symphony, philharmonic. They're all the same things, concert orchestra. It's just maybe the different ensemble sizes. An orchestra can play symphonies. It can play film music, John Williams. Mm. It can play Broadway music. And that's exactly what we're doing with Jonathan Rocksmith, with the Egoli Symphonic Orchestra. But it's very varied what you can do with an orchestra. You can put a rhythm section with it and you can be more contemporary, or you can play the classics like Beethoven. So they're the two different things to those ensembles, yeah.
What does it mean to be a conductor?
Yes, good question. And I get asked that a lot. A conductor, it's a multifaceted job. The bit that the audience see is when you walk on stage and you take a bow and you call the maestro and you turn around and then you go and the orchestra follows you. What do I mean by the audience, the orchestra follows you? Well, you are the metronome in many ways. So from a technical point of view, you're counting in the orchestra. One, two, three. And then you keep the tempo going, you know, you can slow down the tempo and they will follow you. Hopefully sometimes they don't follow you. You have to wake up. So I'm giving them tempo. I'm also balancing the orchestra as well. So if something's a bit too loud, I might just, you know, just tell them to be quiet. Mm. And they're watching me for my facial expressions as well. So if I want something very hard and agitated, agitato, you know, I'll be conducting if it's very staccato. Yeah. But if it's very, you know, you're looking at the first flute player and you're trying to get music out of the musicians. So they feed on you. The real, honest thing is that they could maybe continue playing if I fell over and fainted, you know. I hope they'd try and pick me up. Yeah. but they could, as a unit, still play together. It might get a bit scrappy in places, but these are all amazing musicians. That's the first role of a conductor. But the main thing is what happens before the concert. It's the rehearsals and it's the pre-planning. So, for example, Jonathan Rocksmith now, I'm going through about 25 scores. So I'm learning the scores myself. I'm making notes of what I'm going to do in the first rehearsal. So as I said to you, we've got five rehearsals with the musicians for a massive concert like this because they sight read music. So I can give them the music and they look at me and they should be able to actually sight read it. If it's very difficult, they might have to stop and make a few. If it's fiendishly difficult, then they need to practice it for an hour or two, you know. But if you're a very good musician, you should be able to sight read most things, I would say. But then in the rehearsal, it's then all the problems that will happen, like wrong parts or somebody thinks they're playing the right notes and you have to, first trombone, I think it's ba 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 ba. You're playing it ba 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 ba, slightly, maestro, sorry. And then make a note. Okay. Also, you're a bit of a psychotherapist as well. or psychiatrist.
Yes.
You know, you got 50 people, and people can be strange, can't they?
And music, no comment.
Musicians can be even stranger. So imagine if you've got 50 musicians in a room. So you've got to win over their confidence as well. You know, they can see straight through a conductor. I mean, I've been in front of many conductors that can't conduct. Let's be honest, you know. I've been in front of maestros who are amazing, and I've seen what they get out of an orchestra. It's in those rehearsals as well where you're winning over the confidence. You're getting this big ensemble to work as a unit. Mm. Because I always say the rehearsal is the conductors and the gig is the players. You've got to have that trust so you know exactly you've got everything that you've rehearsed. That's the role of a conductor.
What's the difference between conducting a Johannesburg big band compared to the Egoli Symphonic Orchestra?
It's the same, but it's not. So a big band, I would say, is a bit more relaxed in what goes on stage. You know, you see me conduct the big band before. You know, I can turn around to the audience. I can stop conducting for a bit because I've got Rob Watson playing the drums. You know, you don't have to give everything a baton. I usually use with a conductor a baton. Mm. I don't use with a big band. It just gets in the way for me a little bit. You know, mm. I want to dance a little bit. You know. Yeah. I could dance if I wanted to, conducting a Beethoven symphony, but it's maybe not the right place to. I mean, I don't know why that is the case. But with an orchestra, I would use a baton as well. It just gives you a bit more clarity as well, a little bit more extension. And you can really use that baton to direct a little bit better. I think it's a little bit more, I hate saying this word, but a little bit more serious in nature as well. I do like the fact of an orchestra dresses up, you know, in their bow ties, and I will wear tails when I'm conducting an orchestra. I don't think I will wear tails when I'm wearing a big band. I've got a white jacket for the big band. You see my white jacket. So it's a little bit more showbiz, I would say, the big band. But in the same breath, the Egoli Symphonic Orchestra, I want to be a contemporary orchestra that redefines what an orchestra should look like. Maybe what repertoire we play. I mean, we played amapiano music a few weeks ago. Why can't an orchestra play the music of Kelvin Momo? It's just a little barrier that we need to break down. So yeah, I think it's the same but different. Yeah.
You've got the first show for the Egoli Symphonic Orchestra coming up, my favorite Broadway. Mm. What was the inspiration behind this as being the first production for the orchestra?
Well, it was Red Bull Symphonic. It was an activation for Red Bull. I mean, basically Red Bull paid for this amazing thing to happen at the Teatro. So that was the official launch of the orchestra.
Okay.
But this is the first concert that Howard Events. So I own the orchestra, but I own Howard Events as well. So it's the first one under our Howard Events banner. And what better person to share the stage as our first production with the orchestra with Jonathan Rocksmith. My favorite Broadway is Jonathan Rocksmith's collection of all the famous songs that he's sung in musicals around the world. I would say it's a celebration of all the massive Broadway hits. I'm talking of musicals like Cats, Les Miserables, of course. Jonathan's famous for his role of Phantom of the Opera. He was the youngest Phantom ever to play the role. He was the first South African, I think, to play the role. I might be wrong in saying that, but I think I'm right in saying that. And he's been around the world playing that role. I've known Jonathan for about 11 years. I'm proud to say that I've produced all of his studio albums. And we've worked together on many, many concerts before. So it just feels so right to be back, you know, creating with John, and it's going to be an amazing concert.
So it's going to be on for 8 shows at the Teatro Monte Cassino in Johannesburg, South Africa, for the overseas listeners. Why only 8 shows?
The Teatro is very, very busy, actually. So what we do as producers is fill in the gaps, I would say, in between these massive shows like Chicago, like My Fair Lady, like what's the ballet at the end of the year? Swan Lake, not Swan Lake, The Nutcracker.
Yes.
And right. Then other producers then, you know, fit in, you know, with these shows. So to have more weeks is not really a possibility. And we find that a 2-week model for our shows is just right. It would be great to do a 1-month run of a big band show, but I don't think we're quite there yet. We've been very fortunate to have amazing audiences for, you know, other shows. It always is a 2-week, you know, like a 2-weekend run. What I like about these 2-weekend runs is word of mouth is so important. I mean, after that first weekend, I mean, people talk, you know, and, you know, the media have been there as yourself. And we do see a massive spike in that week of people wanting to go and see the show because other people have seen the show. So yes, that's why we do the 8 shows. Yeah. And we just feel it's a, you know, the right sort of business fit for our model.
The big band show, this type of shows, they're quite new for the South African audiences. They're more used to, like, for example, the My Fair Ladies, the Chicago's and stuff. Mm-hmm. Did you find when you first decided to create or produce these shows, there was a sort of a barrier of perception of the audiences to come through and be open to it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a risk you take as a producer.
Okay.
And we took that big leap of faith with Jonathan in Swingle Bells. We were given these dates and it was just pure faith. I mean, I believed in Jonathan as an artist. I mean, you know, is a guy that will, you know, get people to come to the theater. I'd seen it with my own eyes before. I played in many concerts with him before. The few big band shows that we'd done before showed me that, you know, there was an audience that really loved to see these shows. And all these shows we'd done for corporates, you know, private, like F&Bs or, you know, Standard Banks, you know, all these big corporate shows that the audience never gets to see. And I always thought, it's such a shame, you know, that we can't get to see these big shows. So when we had the opportunity to step up as producers and to believe in our idea that, well, on that time, that South African audiences needed a good old Christmas show with a big band, that sort of feel-good Michael Bublé, you know, you know, chestnuts roasting on an open fire, just all coming together, you know, all those fuzzy feelings that Christmas give you. I believe that it was a product that South African audiences wanted to see, and only ticket sales can dictate the success of a show. I mean, you can talk about it, you can, it was a massive success. I mean, so we went straight into the next year with the concept of Swingin' Las Vegas, because I just thought, if people are going to come and see a Michael Bublé-ish show, a Christmas show, then surely they'd come and see Frank Sinatra's. And but it was a leap of faith. And again, people came out in the thousands. I'm talking about maybe 14,000 people seeing Swingin' Las Vegas, which is great. You know, as a producer, then, you know, it's a good concept. And then, of course, we went on to do Swingin' Las Vegas this year as well. Again, that was a success. And I'm thrilled to say that ticket sales are flying for Jonathan Rocksmith as well. See, I always believe that productions, other productions like Chicago, My Fair Lady, they draw people to the theater. So if they're successful, then other producers can be successful. And if we're successful, then people want to go and see, you know, so it's very, you know, it's
practical.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's just great to see. I mean, Monty's flying now, Monte Cassino, the Teatro. People going out every weekend to see different shows, different demographics. I mean, we had Kelvin Momo's audience the last week or last month, and we're going to have Jonathan Rocksmith's audience there. And it's all with the same production team. Mm-hmm. It's great to see. It really is great to see people coming out to see live music.
You've got My Favorite Broadway coming out shortly. Yeah. And can you tell us what else is coming up for you for the rest of the year?
Or
is it all secret? I know it's very secretive in your world.
Well, no. Well, the next thing we'll be doing is Born to Perform, which is a showcase for young musical theater talent through Stage Work School, Gemma and Matthew Marinas. And it's happening at the Teatro, Monte Cassino. We're doing four performances in September. And it really is showcasing the best of young theatre talent. I mean, these kids go on to Lambda and go on to, I mean, a lot of the ex-students now are around the world, working on the West End as well. So it really is an amazing showcase as well. So that's another production. We've got some more things lined up that I can't talk to you about.
Yes.
But that's just for the production. I mean, we're busy in the studio now doing some film work. We're busy working on an amazing documentary as well, which I can't talk to you about as well. And just lots of commercials in the studio. As I say, we've got three studios, so we're always busy. People say, how do you do it all? I said, well, I've got a great team around me. So, it isn't just me. But we're all now in My Favorite Broadway show mode. Our opening night is the 25th of July, and we're doing four performances that weekend, Friday evening, Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening, and the same on Sunday. The Saturday shows are at 3 o'clock and at 7:30. And then the next weekend, the 1st of August to Sunday, the 3rd of August as well, it's the same thing. So we're doing 8 shows. And as I say, it's with a 32-piece Egoli Symphonic Orchestra conducted by myself. And it's just, Jonathan, I wish I could tell you some of the things that are happening. it's going to be showcasing Jonathan at his very best and singing, playing the piano. He's done all the arrangements for the orchestra. It's been amazing working with him. And we've got an amazing team behind us as well. We've got multimedia putting the sound and lights in. And as you know, Howard Events, we go over the top. you know, as a production company, we could actually make a lot more money by not putting all the bells and whistles on stage. But that's our mandate to the audiences, is that we want to put the very best shows on. And that's the best sound systems, the best lighting, the best crew, the best creative team, you know, in town. We've got the very best around us, and the musicians on stage are the very best. And so it's going to be amazing to see. Well, we're calling it a homecoming for Jonathan, because he's been on the road since before lockdown, actually. Mm. He's come back and done some smaller gigs at the Peter Turin Theatre with his one-man shows. But it's going to be amazing to see him coming back to the theatre, which I think he was born to be on, actually.
Yeah.
And as you know, you've seen Jonathan in action. He's just he's an amazing talent.
So you've given us all the info and all the inspiration to be there. So as a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
Buy tickets for My Favorite Broadway. That's the first thing.
Yes.
I would just say, well, thank you for listening to me. You know, that's my story. I love South Africa. I love being a musician. I love being a musician in South Africa. And I love performing. My dream now for the future is to really start to present some more live events, with the Igoli Symphony Orchestra and with the Johannesburg Big Band. That's very much, you know, in the planning now. And, yeah, just to keep growing as a musician. And, I would say to the audience, keep supporting South African music and theatre. It's an amazing industry.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.